Inoffensiv sjovere, vil du sige, at så er der styr på det. Sjovere. So we've done through almost 2 years now of something that we never experienced in our lifetimes, something very that's touched every single one of us, that we've lived through horrors that we never thought we'd experience. And people have described it as the Holocaust of our lifetime. And I hope I don't insult anybody by anything I'm going to say in the next few minutes. And I obviously, every single Lashon was precious, and everything we've gone through, every single family that's been hurt, destroyed, traumatized in ways that will never be undone. You can never under I don't want to appreciate that, the only thing we've gone through. Yet to describe it as the Holocaust as we know what the Shoah is just a gross underestimation of, or appreciation for the Shoah, so the tremendous tragedy and tremendous destruction that we all went through in the Shoah. We've lost in the last couple of years somewhere in the ballpark of 2,000 Nishans, each of them irreplaceable, each of them special, each of them. We've heard about many of them. There's been different eulogies and different articles that have been written about every one of them. 2,000 are irreplaceable in 6 million Jews. We say that like it's a number because we've been living it through all our lifetimes, and 6 million people were killed in the Holocaust. Just think about that for a second. Think about the tragedy every single time that you turn on the phone in the morning, or every single time that you look at the news, and another Rahman Aslan, there's another tragedy, another holy chayal has met his end. Think about the piercing pain that you feel every single time you see that. And Rahman Aslan, it's more than one, and it's thankful, whatever happens, think about how it pierces your heart. If you know the person, don't know the person, you look for the first second, you've got every single one of us, I know I do every single time, where's the person from? There's a plan that you have, that it's someone that you know. 6 million people. There were 9.5 million Jews living in Europe, statistics say, before in the 1930s. And by the end of the Shoah, there was 3.5 million, but if you even look at that number, three. Over 1 million of those Jews that were left were in the Soviet Union, which I'm not sure there was an existence that was there saying that there were survivors. We live in a country right now that there are, I believe, we've crossed a closer threshold of 10 million, a population of 10 million. I believe that includes all people, Jews and non-Jews. And so I think the Jewish population somewhere, I don't know exactly, 8, 9 million, less than it was in Europe in 1930. Can you imagine for a second how many people would be in the world right now? So we talk about 6 million Jews were met their end through horrific means, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But just imagine each of our grandparents, and great grandparents, can I just have the source of having how many children do we have? What they have a source of having? What grandchildren do we have? How many great grandchildren? Can you imagine how many Jews is as someone mentioned earlier, when Kain snuffed out the life of Hevel, says, doesn't say Damachicha, it's Dameachicha, it's all the Dori Doris that were after that. We can't even comprehend what that means, that 6 million Jews met their end through the most horrific ways possible. There's a statistic that I saw that over 50%, over 50% of the families that existed in Europe, there's no way to know this number exactly, but it's somewhere over 50% are gone, completely severed or forgotten. The last couple of years I've spent saying over vignettes and testimonials from different people that I know and relatives or friends or people that were able to give over testimonials, people that had families that survived, there was an element that was left. 50% of those families are gone. It's like, you know, when in Sefer Bamidbar, when we talk about the count in Parshas Pinchas, and their shvatim that no longer, their families and shvatas of shvatim that no longer remain because of whatever happened, maybe because they fought with the Levim when they went back after Aaron's Patir, whatever the Midrash says, they were gone. 50% of the families in Europe are gone. There's no one to say anything. There's no one to say Kaddish for them. There's no Kfura. There's no, you know, there's nothing. And it's something that we just can't comprehend. There's only been two times in history where there was a gzera of shmad against Klal Yisrael, lashmid la'arav la'aveid. Even the Churban Bayis, every time we've gotten punished in Eretz Yisrael, we've lost many Jews. But the only punishment was Golos. It's Churban HaBayit, it's Eitzim Rabbanim, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, but it was a Golos. There's only two times in history where Klal Yisrael was met with Xero, was given Xero, Lashmir Baharobu Babe, as Kolayudim Tafin Noshim. The first time, obviously, was the days of Haman, Harasha. And Haman was wanted to do the same thing. And it was, and he had it, he had it in his hands. And we know that the only reason that we survived the Purim story was because we had a Mordechai and Esther. We had leadership in the Malchus, who was able to A, find out what happened, and B, react to it. And we know the only reason, the reaction, what was the reaction? The reaction was, let's get all together. We have to daven, we have to fast, we have to pray. We do everything we can to overturn Gzeira. And Baruch Hashem, they were successful. During the time of Shoah, for whatever reasons, we didn't have that power. A similar type of situation arose where a madman rose to power. And if you go through the history and understand some of the background of what happened 100 years prior as to why he pointed to the Jews as to be the scapegoats for all world's problems, it all made sense to people back then. And they all joined into this fury to try to annihilate us. And it's clear that people didn't really even know what was happening across the entire world. But there was no Lech Kenosis Kalayudim. I looked up last night just to get a sense a little bit of what was happening in America. And we know that there's a fight on solo, we know that the Agudah was doing a lot, we know there are different programs, the Joint and all these programs are doing a lot to try to help Jews. But it's very clear that until 1942, which is a full 3 years after the war started, the full year plus after the camps opened, they didn't really have a full appreciation of what was going on. And so not much could really happen. But even after that, so there's a date in December 1942 in America where they had a day of mourning, a national mourning that was joint with all Jews of all different types of religion, of shkafos and before, fighting everybody. And you know, they had one day of mourning, and then there was a day in 1943 where they had some type of gathering at Madison Square Garden, which was not very dati, and they may have said Kaddish, but that was about it. And there was a famous march of 400 Rabbanim, which were mostly Orthodox Rabbanim, to the White House in 1943 also. And I'm sure Tehillim was said, I'm sure other things were said, but it doesn't seem to be recorded, at least, maybe I'm wrong, it doesn't seem to be recorded, this concept of Lech Kenosis Kol Hayudim. We see now that in the time that Tkufa we're living in right now, that whether or not, again, as Rav said last night, we should be, you know, people should be here, should not be here, but it's very clear that across the entire world that people are davening for us, that Klal Yisrael is davening for us, that when things are looking even more bleak, that they up the davening, they're saying, they're saying Tehillim every single time, and they're focused on Eretz Yisrael. And there is an aspect, as much as we're struggling with our achdus, there is an aspect of Lech Kenosis going on, and maybe that's the reason that we've been saved right now. Maybe that's the reason that we haven't met a worse destruction. I want to talk about one other aspect, two other aspects of the Shoah that differs from what we're going through right now. I think it's important to understand that this final solution, how not only is it a means to destroy us physically, to take, or, you know, just to kill us, but the way that we are treated Again, the only reason I'm saying this is because this is the meaning that we have is that we're living through it now. We have Rahman al-Islam, who are still underground in terrible, horrific conditions. May they be released very, very soon today. And we have people, other who are waiting for here in Eretz Yisrael. And we talk about the conditions. We see some of the survivors that have gone through that. There were millions and millions of people were treated like that. The only difference between the way that the Nazis treated the Jews of the time and what we have now is that they were above ground, which may or may not have been better because they were open to the elements. They were open to elements of Poland in 1943, which is, we go through global warming now, they must have been going through global cooling right back then because it was frigid, frigid. You can look at the records, the temperatures at the time were very rarely above zero. And they were exposed to malnutrition and disease. And Rahman al-Islam and Auschwitz, what Yamach Shimon did to hundreds and hundreds of Jews, treating them like lab rats. This is something that if we had seen today and we had all our social media today, there would be such an outcry and such a disgust. We wouldn't be able to go on. The Mamash wouldn't be able to go on. It's hard enough to see what we see right now for 50 Jews that are left. We would not be able to go on. And so to continue to say that that we're going through the show of our lifetime right now is very, very hard to say. There's another aspect I mentioned before that, the Dori Doris that have been cut off. I got a surprise this morning from someone who really should be saying a speech. But Shlomo, who I just wanted to thank in general for again putting together the program. It's not very easy to do this every single year and for putting it together and taking that advice on my shoulders. But he told me this morning it's a show and tell project for me. And I want to say this should be English for Shlomo, his dear father, his dear parents. But there's something called the second generation survivor. I'm very familiar with it because my mother is one, my mother-in-law is one. And we talk about the people who survived and all they went through, but there are even those who do survive. We have a concept in Yiddish, we have a concept that Chazal tell us that something is in your bones, something you give over to your children, your grandchildren. So in regards to Torah, so Bezrat Hashem, that's already a foot in the shulash, and it's never going to be broken. The same thing holds for trauma. The same thing holds for something, an experience that any human being goes through, is passed down to the children. I want to show you what Shlomo gave me this morning. This is the armband that his father wore, correct? I feel like I should maybe be touching this. Coach Gadosha. In the 1930s and the 40s from Auschwitz. This is real. This is not a museum. This is something here. This is the Magid, someone's father wore. My grandparents wore these. When you go to visit Auschwitz nowadays, I haven't gone there 130 years ago. When you go to Yad Vashem, my wife took my kids to Yad Vashem this week. You see all the artifacts there. My son noted, there's a pair of tefillin there. It's a pair of tefillin for a young man there. That's just like me. These are real. This is not a museum. This is something we went through. And for every second generation survivor, the trauma is there and never ever escapes. And it goes down to third generation, and I don't know how much longer. But just like we have kids now, our younger kids especially, who have gone through the last couple of years, just like they, the sirens that go off and it's with them and something that they'll probably tell their kids about. This is the trauma that they went through, the Gehenna for 5, 6 years they went through, is something that is not just a one-time thing from 80 years ago. It still exists today and is very much a part of every single one of us who have, relatives or parents who went through that, and it should not ever be forgotten. I just want to end something of a little bit of a different note. Rebecca mentioned last night that this Tisha B'Av should be different than every other Tisha B'Av. And I had been thinking about that beforehand. We haven't really mentioned much today about the Iker Tisha B'Av. I don't think we very much mentioned the Purim Bayis today. And every year we kind of go through that and say, because, you know, we don't really understand what Purim Bayis means. We don't understand what the Mikdash really was because we never experienced it and we're so far removed. It's been 2,000 years. And how can we possibly mourn something that we don't really understand and feel? I remember the first, you know, Erev Pesach or whatever, it was before Pesach last year, the first set of Iranian missiles came over. And it was, you know, we had 3 hours of warning, and it was at 11 o'clock when it was coming, and 2 o'clock was going to be, and some of us were up, and some of us were asleep, and big booms, and we woke up in the morning, and we were amazed. We were relieved. We're thankful, so thankful. We said Nishmas. We're so thankful we got through that. And then on the Erev Rosh Hashanah last year, we had the second set of missiles that came over and drones that came over. And that was the first time most of us had this special alert on our phones. And we, you know, go run. You have 20 minutes to get into a shelter, to get into a miklat, whatever it is. And there's this extra pocket. And those that as I went out for close to an hour, I believe 45 minutes or an hour. And then we got out. And there was one person who had killed him, was an Arab. And I remember going to the Makolot that night, was there, Yontif, in Gerich Yontif, and just looking around, like, smiling, like, wow, like, this is, like, incredible. And it wasn't even, like a relief, it was like, something amazing is happening here. And then on the first night of the war, whatever, the 12 days, for 2 weeks that happened 2 months ago, so again, we got woken up at 3 a.m. by something that we found out wasn't even real, but it was just to warn us that some terrible things are coming. And, you know, we woke up in the morning, and I remember I have to go to Merkaz every Friday morning, and, you know, try to go as early as possible, usually there around 8 o'clock, just before the craze of Erev Shabbos, so I can do my meals for Shabbos, and I went that week, a little bit earlier even, and it was like Erev Pesach in the Merkaz. Everyone was screaming around, everyone was frightened, everyone was scared, everyone knew that the missiles were coming again. We didn't know exactly when. We have 2 hours, like 3 hours, what's going to be. We want to get ready for Shabbos, we have to be ready. And we got back, and then we got the warning on our phones to, you know, start heading to the mikvah because it's going to be another few minutes. And this time, the sign didn't even happen. I don't think the first time it was even as I thought, because we destroyed everything before it got even close to here. And I remember that feeling that day. I remember walking the streets afterwards, and we were obviously going through another 2 weeks, and we lost 20 Jews, 29 people in total, which is a miracle. All the nerds went through with it. I felt Yad Hashem clearly that day. And it's something, as again, our Rav said last night, the story about the Kohen, who never wanted to hear another Rifus Kohen because he didn't want to have this leave. I think we all got a glimpse, a small, tiny, little glimpse of what it meant to live with a Mikdash, what it meant to live with HaKadosh Baruch Hu with us. We try to give imagery of Elam Malkeinu and Hashem is our father. Hashem. We don't appreciate that, but everyone living in Eretz Yisrael that day and that too for the last 2 years has felt tangibly Yad Hashem. And that should give us something now to cry for, to hope for, to yearn for. It's not something for us anymore that's not real. It should be real to us. We felt it and we continue to feel it. And so, when we sit here and think about what we're missing now, think about having that all the time. Think about having that love with you and that embrace, that warm love and embrace with you every single second. Because we felt it now. And it's not something we can say anymore, I don't know what this means. We know a little glimpse of what it means. And if that's a little glimpse, then you can imagine how amazing, amazing, amazing it's going to be. Yad Hashem, to keep that with us and keep mourning what we've lost and keep yearning for what we want to have again. Throughout Hashem, by next year, by tomorrow, we will feel that full embrace with the Gula Shleima. Also auch immer das Kilo. Wo ist Hunger? Sorry. Sehr schön, dass du